What up? It's the Crossover. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Welcome back to the Friday edition of the Crossover. Reminder, yeah, we've expanded the pod. You'll still hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday discussing and debating all the latest around the league. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Might be a player or coach, a pundit, author, musician, actor, basically anyone with any connection to the NBA or who's just a big fan of the game. We kicked it off last week with Hip Hop Legends Tag Team, and today I got two more guests, also a tag team of sorts, Sam Morrell and Stavros Halkias. They're both stand-up comics here in New York. They are the friends, they are friends, and the co-hosts of Pod Don't Lie, an excellent and very funny pod about the NBA, and they are huge fans of the New York Knickerbockers. Yeah, that plucky little upstart making a little noise in the Atlantic Division of the Association. Maybe you've heard of them. They've won a few games recently, and some people around here are moderately excited about this. Look, it's an amazing, magical season for the Knicks. No one saw this coming. Not all of us in the media, not the odds makers, not the analytics people, not the statistical models, not even the Knicks. No one saw this coming. And this is, you know, this is what we love about the NBA, what we love about sports. We can analyze it all to death and still be pleasantly surprised. Sam's a native New Yorker, grew up on the Knicks, so he's gone through a lot with this team. Stav is a transplant from Baltimore, but he kind of caught the contagion of Knicks fandom, as he describes it, from Sam. They're both hilarious. They're a lot of fun. We also talked a little bit about doing stand-up in the pandemic age and all the weirdness of that for the last year. That's coming up next. Please remember, subscribe, rate, and review the Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck. Okay, up next, my conversation with Sam and Stav, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined by the stars of the Pod Don't Lie podcast, which I believe you can find on any podcast network, all of the podcast networks. Sam Morrell and Stavros Halkias. Gentlemen, how are you today?
We're good. Thank you, Howard. Yeah, it's apparently you're a star if you just sign up for an Apple podcast account, which is essentially what we did. So thank you so much.
We're YouTube stars. Yeah. It's an honor, man. It is. We love your stuff. So this is awesome.
Is crazy. Like we were talking before, I'm still thinking it's a mistake that we got booked. So
I appreciate that.
Very happy to be here. And this is also the biggest cultural drop off from tag team to Pod Don't Lie in 1 week. But we're happy to be here.
Listen, it's only a matter of time before you guys have your own Geico commercial and you're in somebody's kitchen.
That's right.
Making them Jack and Cokes instead of ice cream sundaes.
That's right.
Right?
That's what we're shooting
that could
for.
Happen.
Exactly. I don't know. You're right, though. We're trying to aspire to that. If we can get a Geico commercial, if we can go from sub niche, I love, because we're both huge fans. It's so funny where when you're on the low post and he describes What Up Beck as the most anticipated words in niche NBA podcasting. If you're niche podcasting, I don't know what we are. So if we can go from sub niche NBA podcasting to a Geico commercial where we're throwing sprinkles around, then yes, that's what we aspire to do. And this is step one, the crossover to Geico. Thank you for helping us build our empire, Howard.
One sprinkle
we're just known
at a time.
As the we're just known as the delusional Knicks podcast. Yeah. I brought my mental illness to Stav.
That's right.
People are so irritated because at the beginning of the season I guaranteed a Knicks eighth seed spot, and Stav laughed in my face.
I did. That is true.
And I have to be honest. I did not see Julius Randle being no one did.
No,
right.
Julius Randle didn't know Julius Randle was going to do this. You know? But credit to 100%. Julius Randle for everything he obviously did in the offseason to make himself into this player. And it's like, it's the lesson that I think we all have to learn as fans and media over and over and over again, which is that these guys, it's not static. They're growing.
Right.
They're in their
right.
20s.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
anybody in their 20s in any line of professions and or work in the world, you evolve. You work on your game.
Yeah.
Some guys don't work on their game and they fall off a cliff.
Right.
But you can make these leaps and we cannot see it coming. And as much as like coaches are experts, scouts are experts, executives, us in the media who try to be experts, we still don't know. Like there's not a single person who said, hey guys, just hold on, wait another year. Julius Randle's going to turn into an all NBA player.
Right,
but nobody,
right.
You can't see that coming. That's part of the fun of sports. We don't know.
We had a side bet that he will be all NBA, Stav and I, and
yeah,
and
I'm starting to sweat. I'm starting to sweat, Howard. I'll be honest. I thought when we made that bet, I felt bad. I thought I was stealing money from my good friend Sam. And now
what's
there's
the
been
wager?
Enough.
It was only $50.
$50. And you know what? I'm lucky because I told Sam I will bet you $10,000 if you. I was so sure at the time. I was like, you named the price. Sam was the skittish one, but now I'm starting to sweat. There's enough injuries. There's enough. Enough is gone, and he's playing so out of his mind that you know. I think it's in play. It's not. I'm not as sure I'm getting that 50 piece as I was even 3 weeks ago. Let's put it that way.
It's definitely in play. We'll get back to that because I assume I usually have a ballot. I will probably have a ballot, which means I have to wrestle with this.
Oh.
I heard you guys wrestling with it on your podcast on Pod Don't Lie, and I think you laid it out right? Like LeBron, assuming he plays some more games sometime soon, and Giannis are first team. Kawhi is definitely second team, and I think Paul George is pretty much a lock for second team. Paul George is having a phenomenal season.
He's playing so great.
So now all of a sudden you have this crowd for, all right, finally, we're in it. I was going to leave this for later, but we'll just do it.
This is Sam's fault, by the way. This is what he does. Any podcast he's on, it starts with, it doesn't matter if it's a decorated Sports Illustrated, covered the Lakers, covered the Knicks. Sam is going to hijack a podcast with Julius Randle talk. That's his superpower. So
I started a dialogue and I have spoken, I have put the energy that I wanted out into the world and I've been rewarded. I'm so proud of him. I love what he's done for New York.
Yeah. So go ahead, Howard.
It's been incredible. No, all right. So here we go. So we're at third team, right? And Julius Randle is absolutely worthy of consideration. But you've got Jason Tatum, who's obviously part of this discussion and is a strong candidate. And he's been in this echelon already for a while, right? So part of this is like having to displace guys who have been there. Or who have been in the consciousness for a longer time at that level, right? So Tatum is there. Jimmy Butler is there. I don't know where the Heat are going to finish. And the record matters a lot to me for MVP, a little less for all NBA, but it could factor in. It's a good tiebreaker. And Zion, who you guys just saw, I think, Stav, you were at the game the other night,
incredible.
Right?
That was the baptism that fully dunked me in the Knicks' mental illness. I was like, all right, if we can win this, if the streak rolls on, I'm in, I'm all in, I don't care anymore. So yeah, it was an incredible game to witness in person. But yeah, I think absolutely you're right. Those are the guys. The one thing for me that's crazy is that, and what's the difference between Tatum and Jimmy and Julius is that, let's be real, those two guys have really had to deal with COVID. Those two guys have really had, especially Tatum, have been. True. So it's like, now, I don't know how you factor that in, though, because on one hand, you're like, well, you can't penalize the guy who didn't get COVID. But on the other hand, it's like, can you penalize the guys who did, who fell?
No.
The league made them play in a pandemic. Oh, listen to Sam.
I can absolutely penalize you for getting COVID because we wore masks. We were safe. That's part of Julius's value is that he never was in the health and safety protocol. I love Jimmy Butler. Jason Tatum's a great player, but yeah, I can penalize you. I think being available, and we penalize players for injury. Why can't we penalize them for getting COVID?
You're such a...
I mean, you know, if we're going to grade on like mask wearing, social distancing, these are all new analytics that I've never had to calculate for postseason awards before.
Yeah.
He's scaring me because he has been on fire lately.
Yeah.
And I hate the Celtics. I want them or Atlanta in the first round, obviously, but I hate Boston with a passion. So they scare me much more than Atlanta, but I want them. I want one of them.
See, there's this other scenario where the Knicks still could—I hate to say it—could still slip some. It's pretty packed up down to that part of the standings, and the worst of their schedule is yet to come. So, if that happens, I was thinking that your dream scenario might be Knicks Nets first round. Like, yeah, that's potentially on the table.
Hell yeah. We're so in on that too. We're it's like, it's seven games of home, you know, let's say seven, but you know, maybe five games of home court advantage, whatever it is. But also you might catch the Nets before everybody's healthy. I mean, that it's this thing that everyone just assumes they're going to be good to go. We're getting late into the season. And every time KD tries to come back, it's like, he injures a different part of his leg, which is not good, you know? And so it might be when you want to catch him. See what happens, Howard, when you hang out with Sam, when you hang out with a lifelong Knicks fan. I'm talking myself into, yeah, give us the Nets first round. But yeah, anyway.
Well, they might be the most vulnerable of the top seeds. I mean, you don't know who's playing on any given day. So right, the outline of the Nets looks like this amazing super team that's unbeatable, but who knows what state James Harden or Kevin Durant are going to be in at that time. You know, and plus, they'll have played like 17 minutes together for the entire season.
Right.
Maybe a little higher than that.
Yeah, but not much.
I think there's some volatility there. So I would assume nothing about what the Nets are going to do in the postseason.
And the Knicks are scrappy too. I mean, they're not, look, we have one all-star. A lot of these things we're talking about have 2 to 3. That's, you know, the Nets have 3 all-star level players. The
MVP,
Bucks have,
you could say. Yeah.
Yeah, true. And the Knicks, really, it's Julius, but we're just a scrappy team. RJ has been on fire lately. He's up to 38% from three in the last 40 games or something. His 3-point numbers, 'cause he started so badly to get up to 38. Yeah. You know, RJ's playing incredibly well. We're just we all play D. We're deep. Like, Mitchell's out. Burks has been out. And people just step in. So I think, you know, Nerlens and Bullock, like, this team is so tough-minded that this is the team we've been waiting for. And I'm not scared of any team in the playoffs. I'm not saying we're going to win, but you're laughing, Stop. But you're a Bucks guy. Do the Bucks want to play the Knicks? No.
Yes. I mean,
Play the Hawks. You'd rather play the Hawks.
Of course, but of course, only because it's like a Tom Thibodeau team. Like, I don't want to get, because the Knicks are going to be annoying to play no matter what, right? Because like, how physical and everything they are. But this is the analogy I want to make, Howard, because I want to explain, because Sam has been a lifelong Knicks fan, right? Sam grew up in Manhattan. I grew up in Baltimore. I never had a hometown team, but I moved to New York, you know, 8 years ago. I've always wanted to live here. So it was like, I was like, all right, great. I'll root for finally I'll have like a hometown team that I can really root for. I'll root for the Knicks. And I moved here the year they drafted Porzingis. And so I was just like, oh yeah, this is my, you know, they drafted the franchise cornerstone. I'm here forever. But it's like, the way I describe becoming a Knicks fan is like, it's like, I feel like Ethan Hawke in Training Day and Sam is Denzel, where it's like, at first I'm so excited. I was like, oh, great. I'm going to learn. I'm going to be accepted into this family of, you know, and then it's like, he's like, smoke this. And he's just like, smoke these drugs. The Knicks are back. Every year it's like, we're smoking angel dust. And he's like, we can get the 8 seed. And this is like, it's like, you can't even argue with this man, Howard, because facts don't matter. All that matter, every time it's like the Knicks are back every year in Sam.
No, I'm
Sam
basketball
dies.
QAnon. I buy in to like whatever makes sense to me. And Knicks fans don't go with facts. We go with heart. Stav and I were at the game when Porzingis went down.
Brutal.
That
game.
Was
that
the
was,
last game.
We were at that.
And because
we had courtside seats to that. Yeah.
Stav is such a big Giannis fan that we're like, all right, that's the game we'll go to. We'll all be happy. And that was, I mean, that was it. That was it for Porzingis in New York. It's crazy. He was playing great. That's when he looked like a franchise. And now it's like, who would trade Julius for him? He's not. I saw Earl the Pearl throw some shade at him on Twitter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's rough when the legends are throwing shade.
Totally.
At you.
Totally.
That hurts. You know, it's funny. So you mentioned something, Sam, on recent episode that you guys did while reveling in the glory of this Knicks season and this streak that they're on. No, but you mentioned something that was really interesting to me that really resonated. You mentioned the kind of the joy of rooting for this team about them. There was two elements, youth. I'm going to misquote you, but it was like youth and underdog. And these were like two elements. And the reason that struck me a certain way is that, you know, I was covering that team during the period when they got Amari, which was one of the first times really, like, remember, Amari put on the Knicks hat and said, the Knicks are back, baby. And it was such a moment that was like such like
totally.
after all that they had been through in the mid-2000s and the Isaiah years, Marbury and Larry Brown, all the craziness.
Ugh.
Amari puts on that hat and says, the Knicks are back, baby. And you could feel it, and you could feel it at the Garden. But that was a team that, you know, Amari was like mid-career vet. So he wasn't like young, but you had Gallo and Wilson Chandler, Felton, and all these guys. There was something kind of, even though Amari was an import, there was something that felt organic about that team. And the first couple months when they were winning a lot and the Knicks felt like they were back and the fans responded in a certain way. And there was like a joy there because it was your guys, right?
Yes.
Like it felt organic in a way that, I hate to say it, and Knicks fans are split on this, so some will agree with me and some will hate me for saying it, but the Carmelo trade changed that feeling about the team in some way. And I'll never forget the night that they clinched the playoff berth to end this playoff drought at that time. It was very matter of fact, and they just kind of walked off the court like, yeah, we expected that. We've got Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
Whereas if it had been the pre-Carmelo trade group, Gallon, Wilson, Chandler, those guys would have been like dancing on the floor and jumping on the scorer's table. So there is something about the team you guys get to root for right now, which is that it is organic. It's young. It's like this group is just kind of come together. It's a surprise, which is always nice. You don't see it coming. Like, this is the best part of fandom in a way, right?
It's 100%. Because that Amari team, people forget how good he was that first half of that season when he played with us. He was in the convo for MVP. He was incredible. He had like 10 straight 30-point games or something. He was dominating.
Yeah.
I loved Gallo. I loved Wilson Chandler. I loved Raymond Felton. Those were our guys. So the Melo thing hurt because we knew he was coming anyway. Like, why did we have to give up everything for him? And and then Melo, you know, look, I had a ton of respect for Melo. I like personally how Julius plays more. It's just my type. he gets six assists a game. He makes Melo doesn't make
Come
guys
on,
better.
Man.
Melo is a better player, but he doesn't make guys better. I mean, so that was my issue.
It's ridiculous.
With it. I love that Knicks team though, the Woodson 54 win team. But
holy smoky angel dust, as going back to my metaphor right now.
I'm smoking it hard, man, but I'll tell you.
Julius Randle over Melo. Anyway,
I didn't say he's a better player, Stop. I said I like
you
watching
like
him
it,
better.
Yeah.
He makes him, he makes guys.
He's a more willing passer.
He is a better playmaker, for
no
sure.
No Nick in history has ever been 20-10-5, and Julius is going to be that this year. So
it's also the most inflated offensive stats of all time this season, too. Let's not get crazy.
And
also,
he is a better defender than Melo. Melo did not play. You heard what Walt said. Melo playing defense.
Yeah,
yeah. Normally
here's
that would be a paradox.
Here's what I'll give you is that Julius is earning that. He's scrapping, right? This doesn't happen. We were talking about in our last episode where it's like who at 27 turns into this player? Like Oladipo had that. 26. Like these guys don't, and even the guys that come out of nowhere to superstardom, somebody like Giannis, it's gradual. With Julius, it was almost like he had that weird year in New Orleans. He had that weird year last year that was totally, you know, that was horrible, the next season. And for this to happen now almost makes no sense. And I will give you that he is willing to do whatever it takes and prove himself in a way that Melo never did, because Melo came in, you know, national champion, came in, thought of himself as an equal to LeBron early on. And it's like, he never felt like he had to prove anything. I will give you that. But come on, dude. Carmelo Anthony is like one of the best offensive players of all time. Yeah, but it's like, you'd rather watch Julius play? You'd rather watch
high
screens and fucking, I'm sorry. and I don't know if we can curse on this.
Yeah, no, you can curse.
this is just, I don't know, man.
I drive you crazy. And that's,
you do. It's ridiculous to say you'd rather watch Julius Randle.
I would. No, Melo's a beautiful player. But what Julius does, you just feel him making guys better. And it's in that Kobe story. It's in that culture thing that I'm obsessed with. I don't think Melo would show up on Melo time. He came to practice when Melo, it was like, it's like an A-lister versus a character actor who like slowly became a guy, you know,
Bob Odenkirk. Yeah. 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 He gets to be Bob Odenkirk. He finally is a movie star now. Yeah. 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 You're right.
this is his Breaking Bad years.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get better, man. Julius Randle he's my favorite player since I think Amari's first half of Amari. This is how sad being a Knicks fan the last like decade was. Like Lynn Sanity was the high point of my fandom. That was 2 weeks during the regular season. You know, it's when you think
it felt
about
longer
that,
though.
Yeah, it felt longer. But that was, I'll say what I loved about Lynn is that he was just a willing passer. I like player. I like teams that move the ball. Like I love the 90s Knicks, you know. Ewing was a great scorer, but he would pass it out to Starks or Hubert Davis or whoever. Oak would hit that mid-range J. Mason was a great passer. I loved that type of ball. So, I appreciate this team a lot.
Yeah, and I think the underdog thing in the youth is like, on some level, though, it's not as deep. Because if you think about it, some of the guys that we really liked, like, you know, I'm part of the – me and Sam are part of the Nilakina hive, right? We love Frankie, but it's like he's
still.
Not – Still, I don't care, man. I just think that guy is going to catch on somewhere. Although you could argue that if it was going to be with – his defensive skills were going to be appreciated anywhere, it would be with Thibodeau. But either way, it's like – I guess it's not – It's underdog more than youth, though, because it's not like we, you know, the guys we've drafted, it's not, I mean, sure, there's Mitch and there's RJ, and that's pretty much it, because, you know, Knox,
Quickly,
you're right.
Is nice.
I think most of it really is in RJ. I think that's what it is, because it already feels like people kind of like underrated him and like kind of forgot about him because
you were one of those people. You were hating on RJ.
Will you let me finish you anyway? Before we get Howard kicked off of Sports Illustrated for the things I'm going to call you, I will say I was even one of those people. Is that all right? Is that what you wanted to hear? I was one of those people that thought, it's like, yeah, there's Zion and then there's Ja and then there's a huge drop off between RJ and, you know, I still
not
love,
anymore. There's not.
Well, it's 2 years. Like, let's just, they can't all be in the same echelon. And I also love Ja because I was a huge Iverson guy growing up and he just kind of has that spirit in me. You know what I mean? He feels like that kind of guy.
He's amazing. Ja is amazing.
Amazing. But RJ is the kind, it's like he already sort of became an underdog and it's like, it's only been a year and it's like, yeah, guys like me will realize, yeah, he's super young. And to see him do this and to see him respond to a Tibbs team, because, you know, that's up in the air. We saw what happened to guys with all the talent in the world. Cat did not like playing for Tibbs, right? So it was always going to be a toss-up. And it's just nice to see RJ respond to this and just be so in. And, yeah, like you're right, Sam, really start making these. I mean, the shooting is crazy and the defense, crazy. He's always had the body, but if this shooting keeps up, it's like, yeah, he really can be a number two option. If he continues to be this kind of guy on a really great team.
Yeah.
No, the other fascinating thing about this. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so pumped about
it. So the interesting thing, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
Oh, no, it's Howard, please you go, because he'll just talk for 45 minutes straight.
No, go, Sam. And apologies for the delays are messing me up.
The one thing that bums me out is, I mean, Stav and I were so on the Halliburton train from the get-go. You know, we wanted Halliburton so badly.
You should see our texts, our draft day texts.
Oh, we were furious. Halliburton and Quickly would have been one of the greatest drafts ever to get that steal. And I mean, we got our backcourt then with RJ for the future. I'm not giving up on Obi because he's still, you know, I know he's an older rookie, but like I'm a little worried. I watch and it doesn't make a ton of sense to me yet. But I know he's young. I know he's 23, but he's a rookie. So trying to be patient here.
Yeah. And not to dwell on the negative, but, you know, this is when I was talking to Knicks fans in January for a story I did about what at that time looked like, oh, this revelation, but it's early and we don't know yet. Is it going to last? And oh, my God, here we are a couple months later. It's even better than they were then. But at that time, there was already kind of this, did we mess up with Toppin over Halliburton? And this in the wake of, you know, Knox over a bunch of guys, Nilakina over Donovan Mitchell. And just, you know, there is a history of this. So it's among the things that like, make, you know, Knicks fans give him a little PTSD is some of these draft mistakes that they are this good despite the earlier mistakes and the possibility. It's too soon to say this was a mistake with Toppin, but the possibility.
I don't think
it
is. he's not going to, like, Halliburton's out of his, he's so good. We can say that at least. That we can say that.
I love him. I love his game.
Sorry to cut you off, but I think that it is a mistake. It's just like, what level of a mistake is it going to be, is what we're at now.
But every team. Even the Spurs, even the Thunder, even, you know, whoever, the Warriors, like, teams make draft mistakes. You know, you can't afford to make them year after year after year when you're drafting high and when you're not good. But what the Knicks have managed to navigate here is to, yeah, like those guys we named, it's like at this point you can say like Nila Keenan and Knox, like those are, I hate using the word bust. It feels cruel, but like those were mistakes. Those were misfires.
Knox just needs defense. He's 40% from three. Awesome. He can shoot.
This is so
but he can't play defense. He's not quick enough. He was a big tease because in summer league, it was one of the most insane performances ever.
He reminds me of, and this is a lot of this is just the physical part of it, and a little bit about him seeming kind of soft. I hate to pick on him. He reminds me of Devin George when I was covering the Lakers.
Oh,
like Devin George had an NBA body. He just looked like an athlete. He looked great. He looked like he could be a lockdown defender and just like a great open court player and everything else. And Devin George just never quite had it all. And Knox, in a strange way, reminds me of Devin. Apologies to both guys. But so belief early in the season was kind of this, like Knicks fans were scared to buy too far in. We're now in late April. There's a few weeks to go here. It's clear they're going to be a playoff team. Where they fall, whatever, doesn't really matter at this point. Is there any part of you that's still like, crap, this is supposed to be a really great draft, and there's that lottery pick that's just going by the wayside. And initially, that was offset by, oh, well, Dallas is struggling. Well, maybe their pick will end up in the lottery. No, that's not going to happen. That was never going to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
So
hear that, Sam? he was rooting against Dallas for until last week. He was like, it can still happen.
I mean, I guess you know, Luka could get kidnapped or something.
Yeah, that's what it would take.
Oh, that's a new Celtic Pride movie. Stav and I are Daniel Stern and just kidnap Luka.
So that's just an NBA draft nerd. No one would even understand. It's like, well, no, this would give us 30% more odds on a number one pick we traded from a trade 2 years ago. It would just be the most nerd movie of all
time. It's tough. I would watch that movie.
Yeah.
It's tough because even though the Porzingis trade, we still should have gotten more for him. I still look back at that, like Dennis Smith. And I'm glad we got the first rounders. For the first time as a Knicks fan, we have our picks. That's something to celebrate. And we have other picks. I mean, of course I'm upset we don't have a shot. But I'm also I'm happy to win. Like, I feel like I've been in bad relationships for so many years. And I found someone, and maybe she's not the person I'm going to marry, but just let me enjoy it for
she
a minute.
She texts you back. You know what I mean? Finally, I'll say, because I'm more of a pessimist when it comes to some of these things. And that was kind of my thought process was always like, one more year. This draft looks awesome. Let's just try and give RJ a bunch of minutes. Because again, we didn't think Julius was going to be this guy. And ostensibly, Obi was drafted as his replacement, realistically, right? Like, that's like going into the season without Julius, this team does suck. Let's be honest. There's no way around it. So part of me sees that. But what I'm more worried about actually is that like the Knicks maybe on some level kind of lucked into even quickly, because you look at because we're kind of crowning this new front office as like, oh, they're finally doing everything right. When in reality, it seems like they tried to get Gordon Hayward, or at least we're kind of like sniffing around. And it seems like they were trying to make win now moves and just nothing. And they just didn't make like a super obviously horrible move. They just weren't Phil Jackson, right? Like we're basically just giving them like a gold medal for not being horrific by Isaiah Thomas. You know what I mean? Whereas what I'm worried about is, because you look at even the Toppin and the Quickly thing, it just seems like Toppin was a CAA guy and Quickly was a Kentucky guy, and Quickly was kind of a reach at the time. So all we're saying this is the best front office of all time. All they did was kind of draft to the biases that people were worried about anyway, which is CAA and Kentucky, and Quickly was a reach. And one of them happened to be a good player, and one of them was a really bad, was not the right move. And so, and they tried to make win now moves, and all the trades they've done this season have been win now moves. So it's like the pessimist in me says things are going good by accident. Things are going good basically because Julius Randle willed himself into this different player, and Tibbs is a great coach. But maybe this front office isn't that great realistically. And maybe, And then when you really start thinking about negativity, and I'm trying to stay away from the same, I'm sorry, I don't want to make you start, you know, sad, but it's like Tibbs also grinds his players down. You know, Julius is leading the league in minutes. RJ's
Taj
playing
Gibson is still in the league. Derrick Rose is back and better than ever.
He called, he called Ben Gordon. You should see, you know, it's like, I'm not even convinced that Luol Deng hasn't gotten a call yet, but basically that's my pessimism.
He's playoff eligible.
Yo, there we go. There we go. Uh-oh.
Let's bring Joakim Noah back and let's get this party started, man.
Don't we still have him on the books? I think we could. So anyway, to be long-winded, Howard, that is more, not so much that we missed out on this draft pick, but that I'm still a little iffy on the
If we didn't draft quickly, this draft is a huge failure. If we draft quickly, Rodney Hampton instead of RJ Hampton, rather, not Rodney Hampton. But
he might be all right, but not as quickly.
Not as good.
Well, they did. This front office gets credit for RJ Barrett. They would have gotten blame if Barrett didn't all of a sudden have this breakout, but Barrett's looking like a really good player. Randall was, of course, the prior front office. So they're benefiting to a large extent, but that happens in the NBA all the time, right? Like, Daryl Morey is now benefiting from what his former Lieutenant Sam Hinkie did in Philly three front offices ago. Masai Ujiri did great things in Toronto and they won a championship in part because of the work he did, but Masai inherited Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and Valanciunas from Brian Colangelo. But he was the one who then made the deals, though, to
Rudy
ship
Gay,
out,
right?
Yeah, ship out Rudy Gay, and then eventually, of course, flipping DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi. Like, there were other things done, but it often happens this way. So I think, look, it's way too early to judge this front office. They've done some really good things. They've done a couple things that you could question, but the results are what they are right now.
Yeah.
So it's pointless to even argue it right now. I would say this is still a very small sample size for any team, and a weird season to try to evaluate anybody. The fascinating thing to me is this. I always have said, and part of this is due to Tibbs in particular, but other coaches too. Like, what's the most important part about or the most critical aspect of getting a team to play defense? Is it about having players who want to play defense? Is it about the coach and his system and him prioritizing it? Because if we say that, well, Tibbs is responsible for the Celtics defense and the Bulls defense, well, then what happened in Minnesota? Because then it flips. Well, okay, now it's the player's fault.
Right.
Well, hold on. I thought the whole thing was that Tibbs gets guys to play defense, and they were bottom third. But he comes to the Knicks, and this is a team that had no defense to speak of,
and
it's pretty much the same group, and they're playing it at an elite level. And I'll admit, in January, February, I was still waiting for it to fall off. Like, it felt like some of that defense was unsustainable, partially because of who they had. It's not a knock on Tibbs. It's just that felt like a little bit of maybe smoke and mirrors or whatever.
Like the opponents were missing their threes.
All the stats guys were saying, Kirk Goldsberry had said, look, like the threes they're allowing, they're just the luckiest team in the league in terms of what teams are missing, right? And there's got to be a regression to the mean. And it hasn't happened. Here we are, a few weeks to go, they're still elite. That is legit. I could not have seen that coming, but it's interesting because this now bolsters that other side, right? Where I would have said before, listen, sure, Tibbs prioritize defense in Chicago, but Taj Gibson, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, like these are guys who were going to play their butts off on defense regardless. Yes. It didn't matter who the coach was. So how much was him and how much was them? And was he getting too much credit? But with the Knicks, like this season is a testament to the other side of that case. I still don't know what the answer is or what the combination is, but it shows something. It tells us something. Tibbs coming in, prioritizing defense and doing it his way has turned the Knicks into a great defensive team that not a single person in the league could have predicted.
No one predicted it, but Julius Randle, I think when the star player plays hard on defense, that says so much. I mean, look at the best defenses in the league. Look at like the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis is an elite defender. Look at Philly. Ben Simmons is an elite defender.
The Lakers.
Yeah. AD, LeBron, when LeBron tries.
LeBron set the tone last year. Yeah, for sure.
Same with Embiid. On defense, when he tries on defense, holy cow. I mean, they're amazing. So the Knicks, Julius has played his butt off on defense, and I think that has made everyone work harder. We have a lot of willing defenders. Bullock is a very underrated defender. Nerlens Noel is a rim protector. He's amazing. We know what Mitchell Robinson does when he's healthy. As you just said, Taj Gibson, like, is he the most skilled guy? No, but there's a reason he's still in the league. He is a grinder. So and look at Derrick Rose this year. He has made a game-saving block the other day. He's blocking everybody. Rose is playing crazy defense right now. And I think when everyone, we have the energy right now where everyone wants to help everyone. So someone falls down, everyone runs to help them up. It's like an all for one thing. Look at great defense. Even that Celtics team, people would say Ray Allen, not a great defender. Well, it's about team defense, right? Yeah. And that team just played defense. When you have a guy like KG and Perkins, yeah, obviously, and Rondo, great defenders, but you can have a couple. Pierce wasn't known as a great defender. I mean, when you all buy in, and this team has just bought in, I think, and yeah, that's part of why they're so fun.
And I think the Tibbs question is like, it's not even going into the season. It's not even that the stars were playing hard. It's that there were no stars. Like Julius was not a star in going into the season. It was a team where Tibbs kind of got to be. Everyone always talks about how like the difference between college and the pros is the coach is like really the boss in college, and you just can't do that in the pros. Tibbs kind of came into a situation where he sort of could. You know what I mean? There was no personality that was going to check him on that roster. No one, everyone except maybe RJ, but even RJ was kind of like, you know, just a young player that we weren't sure of. No one had the cachet to stand up to him the way Cat did in Minnesota. So I think that's really what it is. And it's like this, and we just happened to get lucky where the mix of the personalities sort of not only did they not have the, you know, the ability to say anything to the coach, but didn't want to, wanted to play hard, right? Like weren't a bunch of scrubs that were sulking. They were a bunch of guys that were like, yeah, let's do it. Why not? So I think it's just, I think that's kind of part of it, because I think, you know, and we're big Cat guys. I love him. He's great. And, yeah, you know, he's been through so much, but I think you can definitely tell it just was not the right mix of personalities, I think, for sure. And that probably explains it. And then you sort of have to give Tibbs credit for almost everything else, going back to when he was an assistant coach on all those teams. So yeah. I think that's what it looks like to me anyway.
So you guys, or at least Stav, you were there the other night for Knicks Pelicans, right?
Yes, sir.
Sam, have you been to a game yet?
Stav and I are going on Wednesday against the Bulls. We had another bet called the Battle for Steak where Stav picked, he took the Bulls at the beginning of the year and I took the Knicks, and winner has to buy the other person a steak. I'm shocked the Bulls aren't better, honestly.
I am too.
I didn't think I was going to win that bet. That was pure just bravado on my
part. I thought I was taking advantage of Sam, and now I'm out a couple ribeyes. But you know what? I thought for sure the bounce from Jim Boylan to any other coach. Talk about Tibbs. It's like, he's like, what if Tibbs had none of the good parts? it's just a guy that yells at you and plays you way too long and tells you to do push-ups to get better at basketball. I mean, it was just a brutal coach. So I thought
makes you punch a clock.
Yeah, the punch a clock was so ridiculous. But I thought
I mean, this is one of the things that's broken the Knicks' way, right? Like the Bulls have underachieved, and especially post-trade have underachieved. The Pacers have underachieved. Miami is behind them right now. They've underachieved. The Celtics have underachieved. So, like, Toronto has terribly, terribly underachieved.
For sure.
Yeah.
Washington's better recently, but, like, you know, the Knicks, like some other teams, have benefited from the generosity of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, yeah.
Which does not diminish anything that they've accomplished, but it is, like, this season has been more forgiving, which is actually good because it's a young team and you need some of that space to grow and find their footing now when when it is a more forgiving season, and then build from there. And they've got plenty of room to build because they've got the extra picks. They've got the cap room. So what do you want to see them do this offseason then? Like it's way too early to like start speculating, but like if as fans, you know, okay, this is great, but we know how it is in New York.
The bar was
really low because it's been terrible for a while, but eventually the exhilaration will wear off of being just good, and it's going to be, okay, when's the parade?
I want a point guard who can set people up. There aren't a ton on the I really wanted Van Vliet, obviously, but now
I'm with you on that. I thought they should have. I absolutely thought they should have gone overboard.
Exactly.
I would not have criticized for a second if they had overpaid Fred Van Vliet, both because of his play and his character. Like
exactly
leader from day one. 100%. I thought he would have been a great play, but you know.
And imagine this team right crazy. Now with Van Vliet. This team right now with Van Vliet is, I think like a four seed. Like I think that right under the like the top three teams. It's like in this diminished East. It's like with Van Vliet. It's like so yeah. I guess a point guard, somebody that just kind of ideally can shoot and set the offense up so that Julius doesn't have to run basically the entire offense. I think would be great. But yeah, I don't know who that is. I mean, it's
who's available. I don't really want Schroeder. I don't think I like Lonzo Ball a little more just for his upside. And I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, Van Vliet was my number one choice for sure. It's such a Gustav and I were talking about this. It's such a point guard rich league. And for some reason, we never have like I love Elfrid Payton for his defense, but we never have that type of.
No,
we never had that.
He cannot be playing this many minutes next year.
No, for sure. But no, like, I mean, no, but you can't deny that he's played with a ton of heart. Like, there's no denying Elfrid Payton's heart. But we need a great point guard. We haven't had one. I mean, think of all the point guards we've had in a point. Like, I was celebrating. I'm like Chris Duhon. He can turn it around in New York, yeah. Man. Like, I'm thinking of
he's
all
got the assist record still, doesn't he?
He does. He has our assist record.
How brutal. But
I think of and then we had the Marbury years. Think about it. Who's been our best point guard in like the last 15 years in terms of consistency? It's probably Raymond Felton. The guy played really well in the playoffs for us. He was a bulldog, but. You know, look at how rich a point guard league is. Can we get someone? Come on. Like,
yeah, how about
anyone?
Kyle Lowry?
Lowry,
how about
I would
Lowry
take him.
Yeah,
I don't know how much is left in the tank, but as a guy who's like a finishing piece for this team, I mean, I think they still need one more star.
For sure.
And maybe Barrett makes that leap. Who knows? But Lowry is a stabilizing
force. But who's available?
Yeah, it's like Lowry or Lonzo Ball, right? Like it's or Schroeder. Schroeder's not the right fit. Schroeder's best as a six man anyway, and he's more scoring point guard.
Yeah,
that's like you don't need another scoring
100%.
Point guard.
100%.
You need a guy who sets guys up. You need a guy who's going to set up.
Derrick Rose is doing what Schroeder does right now, basically for us.
Yeah.
I mean,
And I think here's the other thing though. That's why I like Lowry because I was always I was a proponent of like one more year, let's get another draft pick, let's see what we can do. But it's pretty clear that when this team is like again, I was in that arena with 3,000 people, and that last minute when we're down 7 and we force overtime, it might as well have been a sellout. Like the energy around this team is so crazy, and then you see the Zion post game where it's like, I don't care what anybody wants to say. He was beaming when he's talking about MSG. And this is a kid. He's not even like a guy who remembers. Yeah. He doesn't know. He knows who Patrick Ewing is because he studies the game. But like he's 20 years old. He doesn't remember when the Knicks were good. You know what I mean? So it's like that's why I've kind of flipped to the like, who cares? Let's be good. Let's do some short term shit and like get people to get guys excited because someone's going to like, honestly, let's benefit off being a big market for once. Let's offset the Dolan negativity with the New York City positivity and get people in here. So someone force a trade. I don't care. I don't
force
care about
trade.
It being
Bradley
organic.
Beal.
Let's
you can't be, really be happy. Come
let's
on,
be like, okay. Let's be okay. Let's stay in the playoffs one more year. Somebody's going to want to be, the actual king of New York because it's not going to listen. It's never going to be KD. It's never going to be like, it's never going to be a guy who plays for the
Nets. It's not a net.
I'm sorry.
It's not a net.
It
it's
will
a
never
Knicks
be
town.
A net. It doesn't matter.
You
so
know another
I think,
thing.
I think that's the best case. I think that's the best case for us. It's like, let's just keep being sort of good and don't lock up too much cap room, like way into the future, maybe do some like big, do some big 1-year contracts or something to get people to, who might be just excited about playing in the Garden, be excited about, being part of the rebuilding the Knicks. And then let's just get Devin Booker. Let's have a falling out in Phoenix. You know what I mean? Like whatever it takes. How long
Sarver
brings
some goats
time
to the office again?
Yeah, exactly.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't see. We got to bring back the glue guys like off the bench next year. I want Nerlens off the bench. I want Alec Burks off the bench next year because I think what they're doing is so underrated. As
I have
players.
Not seen Burks miss a single shot. By the way, I'm convinced of this. I have not seen every minute of every Knicks game because I have to flip around a lot covering the whole league. I swear. To God, I have not turned on the TV once and seen Burks miss a shot. He's shooting 100% as far as I can tell. I'm not even looking it up on Basketball Reference.
Yeah, he's
close. You got to watch more games because we need you. But he's been great. But then, yeah, I'm with Stav. Also, Kyle Lowry for Shumpert was on the table. We pulled out. They should give us reparations for that. They fleeced us with Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah,
it was
true.
Evil what they did to us.
It's evil.
And I talked myself into Bargnani. I'm sick in the head.
Yeah, that's
I was like, Melanie. He's a shooter. He was the first overall pick. I'm sick.
He's got the pedigree. He's gonna have Little Italy up in arms. No one's gonna pay for pasta this whole year.
Knicks fans have been through some stuff. There's no question. Yeah. When you've talked yourself into Bargnani,
Oh yeah.
So what else can I do, man?
Yeah. Stop. I got to ask about what MSG was like, though. So you mentioned that it felt like it was actually a full building. But, I mean, during the rest of the game, before that push into overtime and everything else, is it weird? I have not been in an arena. So I've been to one basketball game in the last year. I went to the Nets Warriors on opening night at Barclays because I wanted to see Durant's debut in front of nobody and how surreal that would be in an empty building.
Right.
So I went there, but that is the only game I've been to because we don't have any direct access to guys. There's no point in me being there. I'm watching on TV. So I don't know.
Totally.
Like, how weird is it? Can they hear everything? Like, if you've got good material in the middle of the game, could you just like shout it out and trash talk Stan Van Gundy?
I think you absolutely could. I was in the 200s. But if you were in like the hundreds, I think certainly the courtside. First of all, as a fat guy, now is the time to go courtside. You're not smushed. We used to work for MSG. We had a show on there. They gave us courtside seats one time. It was honestly one of the worst sporting experiences. I was mushed into a folding chair. I felt like I was in a rec center. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I was in a middle school graduation. It did not feel great. My thighs were chafing while I was sitting down somehow. So I will say, as a comfort, now is the time to go to a game if you're a plus size cutie out there, because there's nobody mushed into you, right? You just sit with who you know. But everything else, the other aspect of it, it was surreal. It was weird. Up until that moment, it didn't really. You're right. You can totally hear what's going on. If you're in the lower section, you could 100%. I mean, if I was shouting, I could probably have like gotten somebody's. If you go in there with an air horn, you could completely disrupt the free throw for sure.
As long as you don't shout, sell the team, it'll be okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Someone will rappel down and get us.
Just put you in a sleeper hold.
So it was honestly, it felt weird. It was like, it was cool because, you know, but you still see these giant Zion dunks. And it's like, even though, you know, I'm not saying you would have cheered because he's the opposing player, but you see these giant plays. And really the only time it felt like a real game was the last minute. I mean, but it felt real at that time when you have all 3,000 people really like that Nerlens block. And you, I mean, the three, I can't even, when Bullock hit that three, it was unreal. Everyone was on their feet, but that's what it takes. It takes everyone at 3,000 going like 100%. But up until then, it's weird. It's a little surreal. But I will say, like I said, pleasurable experience. The lines are nothing. You know what I mean? You could take a piss anytime you want. You know what I mean? There's no timing it. There's nothing.
Always a plus.
That's an underrated aspect.
From a comfort aspect, go right now. If you're a finicky basketball fan, now is the time to go get. I got half a mind to go buy watch a couple more games, honestly. But
let's go to more games, man. I'll go with you anytime.
I'm down, dude.
Let's
do
it.
So the one alarming thing I heard in your recent podcast, though, Sam, I got to just try to talk you down a little bit on this one.
Yeah, here we go. I love this.
Do not. This is to you and to the rest of my friends out there who are Knicks fans. Do not get too invested in this Zion thing. I know he said all the right things. I know, and I felt the same thing watching him. The expression on his face, man. Like, but listen, you guys have been around a while. I've been around a while. Everybody who comes to play at the Garden, every star, every role player, everybody, they all wax poetic about playing at the Garden. They all talk about the Mecca. It is almost perfunctory, right? Now, he was lighting up more than the average, but as many of my colleagues in this business have noted, no one's ever skipped out on their rookie extension, their max extension off their rookie deal. He's not going to be the first to do it, especially with an injury.
How many of those guys had their best friend?
This is where you guys get
none of those guys.
this is like
also. I want that all lefty squad, man. That's a hard team to guard. Everyone's going
the first
left
ever
all
Southpaw.
This is like KD is coming because they hired Royal Ivy. Like, don't talk yourself into these things for your own sanity, Knicks fans. I'm trying to help you.
Look. I think we just need. I think we're back at a place where we can land a big free agent. So it more represents that to me that the excitement in the Garden is back. So,
yes, but he's 5 years
Zion,
out.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Robinson for Zion and a first and Mitchell for Zion. Who says no? You know what I'm saying?
That's right. I think it worked. Yeah, yeah. Ingram and Zion don't work.
We'll have to throw in some filler, you know, some cap filler. But I think that's you got the bones of a trade right there.
I think we're gonna. We just need to land. I hate that every player is locked up, man. I would love if there was a way we could bring Kawhi in. I know he won't leave, but like someone, get us someone for this.
The timing is tough.
The time is right. Yeah.
But the timing is tough because right there, I said this earlier in the season when they were first starting to look like this was legit and sustainable. I said, like, do not judge this next season by whether they make the playoffs or not. Obviously, it's more fun to make the playoffs, but judge it based on, are they respectable? Are they competitive? Are they competent? Have they reestablished themselves as a respected franchise and a place that guys would want to come? Because you've got New York. You've got all the advantages in the world of just being here. Brooklyn already showed that, right? Just being here. The Nets have none of the history of the Knicks or any of that mystique, but it's New York, and they showed competency, competitiveness. And so that's it. Like, if the Knicks come out of this season, and they will now, this, you know, the if was back in January. If they came out of the season just showing that they were competitive, entertaining, competent, and have restored something, then free agents and their agents will be much more interested. Unfortunately, this summer is not the best to make that play, but that doesn't mean it's not still like the most positive forward momentum they've had in a while. So sustain that, extend it out another year. Who knows? I mean, you know, this happens all the time. We don't always know who the next disaffected, disillusioned superstar to demand a trade is going to be. So they're in good position whenever that comes to pass. And that's all you can ask for, I think, at this point, other than Zion forcing a trade tomorrow, which, as I'm telling you, please don't invest yourself emotionally.
Burks, Mitchell, D. Rose, they need some veteran leadership
Nilakina
over there. You got Nilakina locking down.
I don't think you can give up both. It's Knox or Nilakina.
You're right. That's right. We can't give up both. It's either Knicks or.
Every Knicks fan I knew when Bradley Beal, when they were playing horribly, every Knicks fan I knew was like, we can package Obi Toppin. I was like, I don't think we're going to get Beal for Toppin as a centerpiece. But let's take it down a notch.
My early years covering the Lakers, I remember there was this thing that happened every year. I'm out in LA at that point, but I'll never forget this. Every year there was some rumors of a trade of Kurt Thomas and Charlie Ward for fill in the blank. It was always this. It was always going to be like that was a running theme. If they just packaged Kurt Thomas and Charlie Ward, they were getting somebody great. And that was like the root of every Knicks rumor back then.
Every team needs a Heisman winner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. remember when we had Charlie Ward on the show and one of the producers, MSU, was like, just don't mention the Jew thing to him. And I was like, what Jew thing? That I'm a Jew? And he was like, yeah, just don't mention that. I was like, all right.
But you know that whole story, right? Of course.
Sure. So yeah.
I had him on my previous podcast. I did not bring it up either. So seemed like the right thing to do. Can we talk comedy for a minute here? What is stand up like in a pandemic?
Oh man. I'm loving it, man. Sam, you take it because to give Sam credit, I was a guy who was scared. I didn't do anything. I did, you know, a lot of podcasts, a lot of remote stuff, but Sam, to his credit, did not take it off, figured out how to do it. So Sam, why don't you explain what it's like, bro?
Well, and you know, late summer last year, I started recording a special on rooftops because I felt it was a COVID safe way to do it. So that was part of what I was doing. It was great. But then, you know, finding a way that it's safe was hard. But now the clubs are back open. I've been at the Cellar down, in the West Village every night. And it's amazing. You see everyone's back. My first set back at Gotham, Seinfeld went on first. You know, so Jerry goes on and he was emotional. It was crazy to see Jerry get emotional. He came off with like, you know, tears in his eyes. This is a big moment. So everyone's been dropping in, Ray Romano to the Cellar, Amy Schumer, everyone. So it's been pretty cool. Yeah. And it feels like they're doing it. It's reduced capacity. They're just doing more shows and it's been great. I'm loving it right now.
Yeah, and I took basically the whole year off, and it was yesterday. In fact, it was the first time I did an hour of stand-up comedy since in September and October. I did some outdoor shows just so I was like, I have to try it. It seemed safe enough, and then so it's been since October was the first time I did a full set, and it really I checked my Fitbit, right? Like I'm a Fitbit guy, And I checked it coming off. My heart rate was like I was sprinting. It was like 180. I was like, what is going? It said, wow, congrats. You've done a lot of exercise today. I was like, I haven't done any. And I was literally like, my body was like, whoa, what's going on? We're shot. Like, this is shocking us. And I got to admit, it was kind of emotional for me too. I'm walking back. I live in Queens. I hadn't really been in Manhattan that much, you know, because it's like, if there's no stand up, what am I going to do? You know, I went to the park a couple times, but, and I was just walking. I was at the stand and I was just walking. Just on Union Square, I was like taking the train. I'm like, wow, it feels like almost, because stand up is so synonymous with like New York City to me. Like, yeah, that's why I moved here. I love stand up comedy. It's the one place where the best stand up comedy can happen, and it's such a it's like it's perfect for the city. It's like the best stand up shows happen in these tight little basements. Everyone's on top of each other. It's almost the most COVID unsafe situation there is, right? Yeah. So it's like for it to even be coming back is like almost a metaphor of, if we can have these shows, even at reduced capacity in these little basements, if we can have, if, you know, it's just people literally just, you know, putting droplets in the air every time they laugh. It's like, if we can have this happening and everyone's vaccinated and it feels safe and it's going, then maybe it's like, if stand-up comes back, then maybe the rest of the world can come back, man. And it's like, it really felt sort of like this incredible thing of like, wow, for the first time, you know, there's a little light at the end of the tunnel. These reduced capacity shows, it's like, it's not quite crushing with 100, you know, in a little basement with 150 people stacked on top of each other, these, you know, huge laughs, but it's a lot better than being in your home and, you know, taking edibles and watching The Sopranos for the fourth time while ordering Seamless, you know, which is how I spent most of my pandemic.
I was on stage upstairs at the Comedy Cellar, and they're doing shows downstairs, and you can kind of hear when. So I hear insane applause downstairs. Just I kind of hear, it's so loud that I can hear it while I'm on stage, and I'm like, oh, did someone? I'm like, oh, why didn't I get that ovation? The crowd to mock downstairs, they cheer really loud, like really, really loud. And then I get off, like, we're being silly, and I get off, I go downstairs, Rock and Chappelle both on stage together. I was like, oh, maybe that's why I didn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like you also.
So it's back.
and you, it sounds like you missed a really good show. You should have been like, guys, why are you booking me right now? I could be downstairs.
Yes.
Wow. Well, it's great that it's back to like, it's interesting. Like these again, not analogous, but you know, after 9/11, there was all this irony is dead and how is comedy going to survive and all these other things. Cause it was such a traumatic experience for the country. And this, of course, the death toll is so much bigger by massive proportions. But it's a slow moving thing and it's weird. And actually on a very practical level, when you talk about it in relation to comedy, it's a much more direct impact, right? Instead of it being about, are people going to be able to laugh again after the shock of 9/11? This is actually, no. Can people actually gather with each other, as you note, in tight spaces, breathing all over each other, laughing and expelling God knows what from their mouths? Yeah. But that is, you know, my wife and I have gone to a lot of comedy shows over the years. It's something we enjoy doing. And that's a very tight environment. It's part of what makes the vibe, though, right? Like, you were talking about comedy outside. It must not even feel the same as being in a little club.
It's really not. I mean, it's like you can, you know, it's the laugh between the best outdoor show I've done, right? And I did, like I said, I did a couple outdoor tours and it was like, it was, you know, it's done as well as it can be. You know, you go from that and then, because right now it's kind of mixed where it's like there's a lot of outdoor shows still and I'm doing a lot of those, but then you go back inside and it's not even, it's almost like a different, it's like a different sport. You know what I mean? It's like the difference of like NBA basketball and like, what was that trampoline ball? Remember that they were doing on like TNT?
Arena ball or something?
Arena ball or whatever, where they're like just jumping off trampolines. It's like, that's the difference between like, you know, it's a difference between Division III. Let me put it that way. Division III or like second division Italian league versus the NBA. You know what I mean? Where it's
exactly.
it's like, okay, this is sort of the same thing, but you know, completely the energy is just so different, but
and also great. You know, it's also right in the club, it's like it's still booming. You still like, even, you know, you still feel that even at reduced capacity, where like I shot a special on rooftops and there are jokes that I was proud of that are getting like you know, which it's so tough to hear that you're like, I guess I'm done telling that joke because I told it. But like visually, we were using drones and it looked beautiful. And it was like nothing. I remember my agent was like, I can't believe no one's ever done an outdoor special like this. And I was like, do you hear the laughter? It's insanely, it's low. So, the laughs are tough. It was more for the aesthetic, but it's indoors or bust, really. I mean, we were just doing that to be safe. And there were comics who never stopped touring. They were like, check me out. I'm on the road. Tampa, Naples, Miami, Orlando. And you're like, oh, okay.
Doing the Florida, Texas run back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah. Go to the places where Phoenix no masks are required and the whole world's on fire. Are there any good COVID jokes, or is that just completely off limits? Is there a way to have possibly made a decent joke about the moment we're in?
Of course. I thought I was kind of had that same thought process where I was like, well, I don't really want to talk about it. But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, the only thing, if a truly good stand-up comedy is just very honest, and there's no way to go up here and not, you know, the jokes I've done my entire life have all been about, you know, it's always your insecurities. It's like dating. It's like weight. It's like family, right? It's like back and forth, back and forth. These are the three things that I keep, that I obsess over. So to go to do jokes and pretend like, oh, hey, how we do, get up there on stage after a year long pandemic and be like, I got this pretty weird umbrella I want to talk to you guys about. It's like, you can't do like, little observational humor without sort of addressing the super elephant in the room. But you just have to be, you have to be honest and like, don't have something interesting to say about it. If it's just like a general thing, no one really wants to talk about it, but you'll be surprised. I think people are happy when it's a good joke about the pandemic. They're happy to laugh because it's like, finally we can laugh about it. Like, we're here, we're in person, but
we all want to escape. I mean, when you see a show and they're wearing masks, you're like, come on, dude, I don't want to see Law and Order SVU with COVID masks on, So I think people want, as long as it feels real. I mean, if someone's like, so I was on a date the other day at a movie and we're like, you weren't. So you gotta make sure it sounds honest and real if you're gonna say the other day or something.
Have either of you guys worked the NBA into your routines, or, and if so, what was your best NBA joke?
I got a few.
Why don't you do it, because I'm thinking of some that are, I don't know that they kind of pass. They're a little blue.
Shelby's got a beep button there somewhere, I think. So
I can't, but you know what? I can't even, it's so funny because it's like, I'd have to, I can't remember the, there's a Harlem Globetrotters reference. Oh yeah. I got to remember. Go ahead, Sam. You got a couple.
I had a joke where I had a breakup with a girl and she said, you're not crying during this breakup, but you cried during that Magic Johnson documentary. And I said, that's crazy that you think you're in the same inspiration category as the greatest point guard who ever lived. Like, that guy played in the All-Star game with HIV. You wouldn't have sex with me when you had a headache. So that was one. I had another about how Magic's he's the greatest point guard ever. Like, every endorsement, Converse, 7-Up. He never got Trojan, but I think he deserved it. Like, if you were on the fence about wearing protection and you saw Magic's face in the box, you'd be like, we should probably. That's the commercial. You're coming out of a blackout. You wake up next to a regrettable one-night stand. You see a picture of Magic's face in the box. You're like, thanks for the assist.
Wow,
that's an edgy one, I guess. I got that one on Conan though, so
nice. Are there who's the funniest guy in the NBA, and is Blake Griffin legit?
He is funny. He's a funny guy, and he's a cool guy. He's like Blake is he's got great timing. You could tell from the commercials that he actually he can act too, which is, he should, like Rick Fox had a little run acting. Blake can act for sure. And he's a good looking guy. And he respects comedy. Like, I remember,
that's true.
I remember we were at Montreal Comedy Festival once, and someone, he goes, this is how much he loves comedy. He said, is that Todd Barry? It's like, how many NBA players are starstruck by Todd Barry? And Todd kept telling me, he goes, that guy knew who I was. And I was like, do you know who he is? He goes, nah.
Dang.
Hysterical. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just...
Yeah, Blake is funny.
So legit. Like, he can do... like, because I haven't seen his act. I agree with you. Like, his commercials, his timing is clear. He's got this great presence. He's got that kind of just that fun kind of, like, he's winking at the audience, right? Like, there's... like, he knows. He's very self-aware. But I haven't seen the stand-up part of it. And the funny thing is, like, some guys seem like they're funny as players. Like, Jason Williams, the Nets Jason Williams... was a really funny interview, but then they put him in the studio post-career, and he was awful. So, like, it doesn't always translate. You think a guy's funny, but it's like, it's not, it's contextual. Like, it's one thing to be a great post-game quote, something else to try to actually, you know, pull this off as comedy. Yeah.
Joe Ingles seems pretty funny, both just because he trash talks and also because, like, it's got to hurt your feelings to when he like busts your ass and he looks like a gym teacher. You know what I mean? Like, that's his career is almost performance art, where when he absolutely got PG in that Thunder Jazz series, that was one of the funniest things of all times. Like, Paul George is like this all NBA guy. And then just like an Australian, like, I don't know, door to door salesman just like was absolutely tearing him up. And, you know, everyone says he trash talks. So he's pretty enjoyable in every interview I've heard. But it's
Jimmy
nice.
Jimmy Butler's funny.
He's pretty funny. I would say I really appreciate, though, there is like a whole new, you know, we're huge NBA fans and we're huge podcast fans. I mean, we've been, you know, I was a full 48 guy. I listen to all the podcasts. But it's really cool to listen to all like guys who know the league really well. But I think recently there's been like this like groundswell of like players with their own, with like direct podcasts or direct stuff. And that to me is always so fascinating, because it's like these guys are, even if they're not like, you know, straight, like funny, like, you know, comedy funny, which, by the way, some comedians in person are some of the least funny people you've ever met in your life. But it's like you listen to like the Knuckleheads podcast. Those guys are hilarious. You listen to Up in Smoke. It's just like, it's so good to just hear. Those guys are just naturally so charismatic and funny, where it's like there's different levels and there's different types of like enjoyment and there's different types of comedy. And that, and like, you know, like we were saying, some of comedy is just truth. And it's like those guys just plainly speaking about the NBA and their experiences and just like not mincing words is so awesome and oftentimes so hilarious. So I think just that is some of my favorite, like, you know, comedy content is just sort of, you know, like, you know, listening to Darius Miles talk about how shitty the Clippers were. You know what I mean? Like, what a bad organization they were. That's so funny.
And the obvious ones too. Shaq and Barkley are great. Shaq has gotten funnier when he just kind of, when Shaq's trying too hard to be funny, he's not funny.
Not funny.
But when he's just kind of being himself,
when he's angry, hilarious. When he's getting trolled by Barkley, he's the funniest man of all time.
That is absolutely true.
And Barkley is gold. I love Inside the NBA. I mean, it's probably my favorite thing to watch, you know. Late, it's like comfort food. You're on the road, you just did that Thursday night show, late game, you sit down, you just kind of chill. It's saved my life on the road.
The Thursday night, that is so true, man. That is one of the best, because the Thursday night when you need something to kind of, you know, tuck you in when you've just started that road trip, for sure.
And Tuesday is good. I love Candace Parker and Adam Lefkoe and Wade's been great. I'm enjoying Tuesday too, but Thursday's the classic for sure.
Yeah.
Now shout out to my buddy Lefkoe. He's blown up. He's done such a phenomenal job. It's been so much fun watching him on the Tuesday show, and they're just getting their momentum. Like, that crew, it's still very new, right? Like, it's been like a year old basically with those guys. They're phenomenal. All right, last thing, because I'm always curious, like, I love origin stories. When did each of you know you were funny?
Oh, hilarious. Sam, you want to go first?
I think, you know, I people thought I was funny when I was just a kid, I think, but then you're funny in a different way to your friends than you are on stage, so that takes a minute. They tell you you're funny, but you're cheating with your friends. You have the built-in likability, so probably teenager, but then you go on stage, you got to be funny immediately. You can use like inside jokes with your friends. You can't do that on stage. I probably found it out 15 or so, something like that. But then when I started doing stand up around 18, 19, you kind of, you kind of take those L's for a while. And and I remember Colin Quinn always says, you get just enough not to quit. And that's kind of how I felt. You get like, you're bombing, but then you have one kill and you're like, that's what it's all. I got to chase that high. So you become kind of obsessed. And I respected stand-up so much. I respected the great comics so much that, you know, you get in not knowing how hard it is. Think of all the great comics. They kind of pop in their 40s, except with the exception of like Chappelle and Eddie Murphy. Most comics, they don't blow up till they're older. You know, it takes a while, and it's because it takes a while to hone that. So, yeah, it's a different thing than being just funny to your friends.
Yeah, I just always was I was like a little ham growing up, you know, even if it wasn't like just comedy or something like that. I was always like, I always wanted to be the center of attention. When I was like a 3-year-old kid, we're at this big Greek festival in St. Nicholas, Baltimore, where I grew up. And they were playing a song on you. And I just got on stage and took them and like asked for the mic and started singing a song in front of like 100 people. Just a little like this obnoxious little toddler was like, oh, I like this. This is a good tune. I'm going to hop on the mic real quick if you guys don't mind. And then ever since then, it was just, I always had a sneaking suspicion. I was a big comedy fan, but I'm a, you know, first generation immigrant. So it's like, oh, you have to be a lawyer. You have to have a good job. So it was almost like I was sneaking. And then I did an open mic, you know, at this fish restaurant when I'm like 18 in college, and it's nobody but other, you know, open mic comedians and like two drunks at the bar. And it's like, I just got a couple chuckles with, you know, these really just these probably horrible dick jokes. And it was, and that was it. That was my, it's not a romantic origin story. There's no radioactive comic bit me. And then all of a sudden I started roasting people. But it was just kind of this lifelong, you know, I just always thought I could do it. I don't know why. I was always like the class clown, all that kind of stuff. But you know, and then at 18, I started doing open mics, and then I didn't really want a real job. And now I'm 32 and I have no other skills. So for one way or another, we're in here, you know, it doesn't matter.
That's it's the best when you're at like a family benefit. They're like, are you still doing stand up? And you're like, what else can I possibly do at this point? There's a
13 year gap in my resume. You think I could just explain that away?
You know, this is the same conversation in press rooms, by the way, when we're seeing newspapers folding everything else. We're like, well, what are you going to do? I don't know what else. Like, I don't have nothing else I can do. I have no actual skills. I report, I write, I yammer away when somebody puts a microphone in front. That's about it. Like, you know, if it's not sports writing, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So, you know, know the feeling. Anywhere you guys can be seen right now, I'll shout out both your websites. Sam's is sammorrill.com, SAMMORRIL, 2 R's, 1 L. And, Stavi.biz for Stavi.
Stavi.biz, yeah. Very businesslike. Yes, Stavi.biz for my tour dates.
Is this come out today or tomorrow?
This is going to come out Friday.
So yeah, I'll be in Bridgeport, Connecticut tonight and tomorrow if there's Friday. And at the Stress Factory, I'll be in Cleveland the next weekend. At Hilarities, I'll be at Spokane Comedy Club the following weekend, then Seattle, then Salt Lake. I'm all over. I'm out every weekend. I'm working on a new hour. I can't wait. I'm fired up. Get Vax. Come see me. And I can't wait.
Yeah, and I will. I just announced a bunch of shows in the city that I think they sold out, but we're adding more. So I'm trying to do. I'm going on a big tour in August, starting mid August, and then I'll be all over the country. But for right now, if you're in New York, I'll be announcing a bunch of like hour shows and little random stuff. I'm actually copying Sam, and I'm doing all these rooftop shows now and little backyard shows and just kind of like hopping around from place to place. So yeah, we're both in the city. So, you know, follow us. I'm Stavi Baby on Twitter. And, you know, I'm always posting about all my stuff over there for sure. And listen to Pod Don't Lie. If you like basketball talk, if you like what me and Sam did here, where we're arguing with each other, we will also throw in a lot more vulgar sex jokes. We can promise you we are the only NBA show that speculates on the sex lives of the Van Gundys. We can promise that.
Pod Don't Lie, you know, it really is the best thing for me because I would be getting this out at like a stranger at a bar. So it's healthy that I, you know, Stav really, we started it the day Durant and Kyrie signed with the Nets because I was just shattered. And it's helped a lot. It's definitely helped. It's been therapy for me. And it's also, Stav will laugh in my face a lot with my Knicks predictions. And then somehow they come true. And I don't know. I don't know how this is happening, but
I feel like my family cursed a witch a thousand years ago, and I'm paying for it somehow. Where it's like, you will meet a mentally ill Jewish man, and all his opinions about the Knicks will come true at your expense. That's what it feels like happened to me somehow.
Dov looks at me like I'm Joaquin in the last scene in The Joker whenever I give him a Knicks take, where he's like, "Oh, you poor thing, you poor thing."
And yet somehow you've sucked him into this. He's now a fully believing Knicks fan. He's all in.
For the rest, I'm all in this season, baby. I'm all in. I'm all in.
It's a risky proposition. But you know what you're getting into. So
That's right.
Well, this has been great, guys. I really appreciate it. And I am almost fully vaxxed. So as soon as I am fully vaxxed, I hope to come see you guys playing live somewhere around the city.
I'm out, man.
Follow Stav on Twitter at Stavy Baby. That's Stavvy. Baby. Follow Sam at SAMMORRIL. Follow me at Howard Beck. And check out their podcast, Pod Don't Lie. It's a blast. And guys, this has been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Howard.
So crazy. Thanks for having us.